And of course, our special guest tonight, Nassim Hedamain, as we talk about all things space on Coast to Coast AM, and we'll be back with more. Nassim, if there are these alternative universes, are they carbon copies of ours now? You know, are there other Earths? Are we there in another, you know, plane of existence?
Well, actually, you know, based on a holographic view, you're everywhere in all planes of existence at the same time. But I think, you know, the thing is that every, you know, every universe is, every point in every universe is the center of the universe, meaning like if it's so fractal and it's scalable to infinity, each point becomes a center. That means on, you know, each point observe the center from its own very specific perspective. And that makes a system that's completely entangled and completely one, that allows for every point to be an individualization. That is, for instance, you know, more clearly, like every snowflake is different, but they're all snowflakes. Every human is different, but they're all humans. You know, I don't think that there is an exact carbon copy anywhere, because by mere virtue of being in different coordinates in space-time, it's gonna gather a different set of information, which is gonna make it a little bit different. But I believe that there's a lot of life out there, and that's getting more and more confirmed now, you know, as we find planets around almost, you know, majority of stars, where before we thought that there was only planets very rarely around stars. And then as we find water everywhere we look in the universe, we see spectral lines of water. You know, there's most likely a lot of life out there. And there's no reason why not. I mean, we look on our own planet in very inhospitable areas, you know, like deep in the sea and near hot vents where we thought that no life could live. And what do we find? We find amazing life down there, like teeming with life. And so there's no reason to think that the universe is not teeming with life. And there's no reason to think that none of that life is not, you know, advanced life like we are, and that, you know, they might have thousands of years of evolution on us and be very, very advanced.
Well, you know, this entire theory that you call the holofractographic, explain that again for us, and how does that exactly affect us?
Well, okay, it's, you know, a holographic plate is like a picture that's taken maybe of an apple. And what happens is that two lasers are interfered when the picture is taken, and it makes like a interference pattern on the photographic plate. And and if you shoot a laser at it, in the space is going to appear an apple as a holographic projection of the original object. And you can take that plate and you can cut it in half and shine the laser and you'll still get the apple. And you can cut it in half again, which would be a quarter, and then you'd shine the laser, you'd still get the apple, and again and again and again. And this is the principle of holography, is that you have embedded information. You know, the thing is that the thing that's overlooked often is that as you cut the plate in smaller and smaller pieces, although all the information is present, you start losing resolution on the apple projection. And this is what I call the fractal nature, the fact that there's scale relationship. And so it's it's holographic and fractal at the same time. And the two together, I believe, makes up our universe. it's more than a holographic plate, meaning it's a hologram, but it's in 3D space, and it's scalar. It's got scale. And so basically we're living in a hologram of the structure of space. And when we realize that, it has profound meaning in our lives. It might sound really esoteric and really out there and really theoretical, you know, although it outputs very, very precise, you know, results. But actually in our life, what it means is that, you know, first of all, nothing can be isolated, that we're all connected. Everything is connected, that you can't separate anything from anything else. And that we are in relationship with everything, that we're in relationship with each other, we're in a relationship with nature, we're in relationship with our planet, with our solar system, with our galaxy, by the mere fact that we're embedded in the whole system. And like that really broadens our horizon. And then we realize as well that like every cell we're made of and every atom we're made of and every subatomic particle and all this stuff is all as well in relationship with each other. And that's what makes this amazing organization, this amazing complex beauty we see everywhere that's highly organized, doesn't look random at all.
No.
And, you know, that seems to be perpetual. You know, people say, well, perpetual motion doesn't happen. And, you know, to that, I always say, well, okay, find me something that's not. You know, because everything we look at is made of little atoms that are constantly have spin components and that have, like, energy functions and so on, and then planets are spinning and stars are spinning and galaxies are spinning and so on. And so we are, you know, embedded in this amazing energy event, thinking that there's not enough energy for everybody. And that's got to change.
You just said something, though, that really sparks my interest, and that is it's not random. It's organized. It's planned.
Right.
Who plans it?
Well, you see, that's the thing. The question should be more like, how is it planned? Meaning, and I don't mean to rephrase your question, but I mean, you know, who is a little bit erroneous because, you know, it doesn't need to be an individual, but it could be the result of all things interacting with everything. Meaning, if it's in a constant feedback flux, then it can constantly self-organize. It's not an external entity separated. It's the whole thing learning about itself. So that everything is learning together. Everything is growing together in more and more complexity. You see it in nature all the time. And so that kind of removes the kind of stigma of us and God, that's something out there. And it kind of brings it back to us that, like, we're part of this incredible learning universe. So it's not who's organizing. It's more that the mechanics of it self-organize. It's a function of the system itself.
It's mind-boggling, isn't it, Nassim?
It is a little bit. You know, the part that's the most mind-boggling about it, and, you know, when I came to it, it was maybe some 25 years ago, and it was to, because if you think about this concept I just gave, you're going to, you know, you get to a point where you got to go, well, okay, but how did it start, the feedback, right? Like, you know, this is how a system learns, right? It sends something out, and then it receives information back, and, you know, then it sends something and gets more and more complex and more, you know, advanced. But, you know, the tendency is to say, well, where did it start? And you know, I got to that point some 25 years ago, and it was almost like, you might call it a Zen moment or something, but it was, it took me back. I had to actually do, you know, stop doing research for almost 3 weeks and just sit in nature and contemplate it. The idea that it never started and it will never end, that it's continuous, that like we have the concept of start and end is a concept of man, not a concept of universe. And, you know, at first it feels weird and feels unsettling. And then when they actually sink into it after a while, you get a sense of relief, a sense that like, wow, it's going to continuously go. It's, you know, our universe is accelerating because it's continuously learning. And, you know, there's no, like, you know, people may reply to that, well, wait, I'm born and then I die. So there's a beginning and there's an end. But the thing is, George, is that, like, if you really look at that, you wouldn't be able to actually say anything about dying, meaning you wouldn't be able to say anything about being born and dying, either than there was atoms that got organized in a certain way, and then there was atoms that got organized in another way, meaning that all you've observed is a change of phase, meaning all the atoms were always there, and all the atoms you're made of, and you're shedding billions of atoms every minute, and, you know, all the way through your life, and you're replacing them by the ones you're eating and all this stuff. And then when you so-called die, you know, everything that makes you is still there. It's just in a different form. So you haven't really observed anything go away. And that's my point, is that, like, it's a continuous, perpetual system at the universal level.
Well, you know, with all that's going on, you tie some of this into some kind of spiritual meaning and consciousness. Tell me the tie-in.
Right. Well, you see, imagine that... you know, these little micropixels were that makes up the, you know, larger micropixels that are maybe protons and then atoms and then planets and stars and galaxies and so on. And then imagine that they're constantly exchanging information with the outside. So like the pixels that are on the inside of the little boundary, like the proton boundary, are exchanging information on the outside through the boundary, and actually that it is this exchange of information between the inside and the outside that makes up the energy event that we call the atom, the magnetic field and the decay and all this stuff. And imagine that, you know, as it exchanges information from the inside to the outside, we call it electromagnetic fields. And as it exchanges information from the outside to the inside, we call it gravity. And that the two are feeding back in a dynamic feedback so that it's learning to get more and more organized, more and more complex, and to interact with the rest of the universe in a more and more coherent manner. And it starts to organize in multiple atoms, molecules that organize in multiple molecules that we call cells, and then these cells, you know, duplicate and start to organize in like 100 trillion cell that is the human body that are talking with each other in a constant manner, in a very coherent manner, so that you can exist right now. And what are you doing? You're out here looking at things, experiencing things, gathering information from the outside and bringing it inside. And as you do action, you actually radiate thermodynamically, you know, radiate energy and so on. You are radiating information back into the vacuum outside and so on, which is feeding you back information from everything you see around you and everything you experience. And so basically, you could think of the whole universe as this probe expanding itself, and you're at the very tip, very end of that probe, looking back and learning for the universe. And so that's how I tie it in, that the physics and the consciousness part are intimately related. And this is really critical that we understand that in our evolution, that, you know, it's not separated. The observer and the observed are in relationship.
The observer and the observed are in a relationship, there's no doubt. Now, did the ancients understand this too?
They seem to have. And, you know, there's many evidence that the ancient understood this principle. They understood that there was this fundamental field that we're constantly interacting with. They understood, you know, that field could be manipulated to create all sorts of effects. There's even some evidence that they understood how to manipulate it to create very serious effects, because we find all around the world, you know, very, unexplicable objects, objects that have been moved in some cases hundreds of miles, that weighs in excess of 1,000 tons in some cases, and, you know, that have been moved over very rough terrain, mountains and deserts and so on, or assembled in incredible buildings, highly precisely, and so on, all around the world. And when we look at all these civilizations around the world, many of them clearly stated that they understood this principle, but they understood these principles because they were taught these principles by sun gods or gods that came from the stars. So here, you know, they may be, even in ancient time, evidence of, you know, intervention from much more advanced culture that might have visited our Earth long, long prior to our written history.
Exciting work that you do, Nassim. When are you going to win that Nobel Prize, huh?
Well, you know, as long as I'm able to help, you know, humanity along and do my little part, you know, I'm excited about it. And, you know, I think we live in an exciting time and things are changing rapidly. And, you know, I know that you've been out there doing this for a long time, and many of your listeners have been, you know, waiting for these big changes. But actually, I think they're happening. They might not be as dramatic as people may think they were, and I don't think we're done. You know, there might be more dramatic parts to come. But they're definitely occurring, and I think we're looking at a really bright future very soon.
I sure hope so, with a little bump in between, I'm sure, right?
Oh, yeah, I think there's some bumps along the way. It's always difficult to move from one way of doing things to another. You know, changes are hard for, you know, large changes for societies. For myself, in my private life, you know, changes are hard. So imagine for 7 billion people. So, you know, but I think we're well on our way. I think there's wonderful things coming, and it's very exciting.
Nassim, let's talk about your Resonance Foundation when we come back. Final hour, we'll take phone calls as well on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Nassim Hedemain. I've got more to talk with him about, though, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Nassim, tell us about the Resonance Project Foundation, why you started it, what it does.
Well, the Resonance Project Foundation is a foundation that is there to help unify all sorts of fields from physics to chemistry to, you know, consciousness study, ancient civilization, anthropology, and so on, in a global unified view of our universe, how things work, and our ancient civilizations, and so on. And, you know, it's there to support research in these fields, and to organize conferences to help propagate information about these fields of expertise and of the research that's being done here. We're currently in the middle of setting up headquarters in Kauai, and, you know, we are doing all sorts of research in theoretical physics and as well in, you know, desktop applications of the theories and so on. And, you know, the idea is to have a hub where so many different researchers can come together and discuss things across fields and, you know, cross-fertilize, which doesn't happen commonly in the standard institution. And I think if we're going to have a new level of science and a new level of physics, it's going to have to include all kinds of things like social mores and you know, consciousness studies and so on. And so these, all these experts have to talk together. And so the Resonance Project is dedicated to this, is dedicated to help bring the results of these research to the public and to educate in that way and, you know, hopefully help humanity along.
The project itself, it's ongoing, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we do all sorts of research, you know, we're involved in, for instance, archaeological research and mathematics, theoretical physics, obviously, as well as, you know, building desktop devices. The foundation has obtained patent this year, for instance, and so on. So there is various level of research that's being conducted. Some of them has to do with, you know, consciousness and spirituality, and exploring, you know, the relationship, for instance, between consciousness, like, for instance, meditators and technological devices, interface between the material world and the consciousness of a being, and all these stuff, all these type of things that, you know, typically are not well received in the standard institution and are not explored. So, you know, this is like a place and a voice for these type of research.
Are we ready for this kind of change, Nassim?
You know, it's a hard question to answer because I think that, like, in one way, absolutely not, and in another way, we're right there. And because it's almost like there's this split currently occurring between, you know, a large portion of the population that's ready to move on, that have done their homework, that, you know, have been on the spiritual path for a very long time, that, you know, understand that the spiritual path doesn't negate, you know, good physics and good mathematics, and, you know, that that's all involved with that. And, you know, there's this great evolution there. And at the same time, you know, there's, you know, so many wars and so many destructive things that are occurring, so much environmental tragedies that are occurring, you know, serious challenge to our environmental health. Our society is in crisis in terms of its financial structure, in terms of its political structures. So it's a great moment of turmoil. But you know, like all great moments of change in evolution, it was always accompanied with great moments of turmoils. You know, and you can look at it in analogy to many things, like, you know, the birth of a child. You know, there's great turmoils, there's great, you know, energies and maybe pains and all this that occurs, and then, you know, there's this change, and then it's beautiful. You can see it, for instance, in an oscillator in a laboratory. If you oscillate a membrane in the laboratory, it will start to oscillate, and as you give it more and more energy, it'll oscillate wilder and wilder and wilder, and then it goes into chaotic mode. And if the tensile strength of the object's not strong enough, it'll rip apart. But if it's strong enough and you add just that much more energy when it's like looking like it's going to explode, then all of a sudden, boom, it re-stabilizes at a higher energy level. And so this, you know, is like that this chaotic moment, I think, in this split where there's a fraction of the population that is going into the next level of energy, this next resonance frequency, and our social systems and a good portion of the population is not quite there yet. So are we going to have the tensile strength to not explode and make it across? I think so. I think it's on its way, and I think it's imminent.
I want to know your take, Nassim, on the Big Bang. What do you think happened?
I think the Big Bang theory is a partial theory that is partially correct, that, you know, there's a big event and, you know, a lot of energy is released, a lot of material is released. I just think that it's continuous, that it's a continuous creation. We're just observing one bang, just because we're really, really teeny relative to the bang, you know, and so we and our lifetime, even as a society, as an Homo sapien culture, is very short relative to universal time. So we just saw one bang. We think there's only one bang, but I think it's continuously banging, and you know, creation is occurring all the time, everywhere. I believe that creation occurs in black holes at the center of galaxies, and the galaxies are the result of black holes at the center of them. And from that theory, I predicted there would be a black hole at the center of all galaxies, which early on they believe was incorrect, but then eventually realized there is a black hole at the center of all galaxies. And I predicted as well that we were going to find black holes prior to galactic formation. That is, that the black hole is there before, and the galaxy emerged from the black hole because the black hole produces the material that eventually makes up stars and the dust that we see between the stars and all this stuff. So so this is starting to be confirmed more and more. So like I said, I think that it's like creation is not just one thing, one moment of creation. I think that creation is like continuous, but there is one specific moment that relates to our specific little universe here. We call it the Big Bang, and in that sense, the Big Bang is an accurate view.
But I like the fact that you say basically, though, it's only half accurate.
Yes. And, you know, and there's complication. I'm trying not to be too technical, but, you know, in some ways, the Big Bang theory doesn't agree with Einstein field equations. And there's all sorts of difficulties, like inflation model, where the universe had to go from a point of singularity, the size of the micropixels that I was talking about, billions of times smaller than an atom, to almost the size that the universe is today, within billionth of a second. So the universe had to expand at billions of times faster than the speed of light in the current model for the Big Bang to be consistent with what we observe. So, you know, there's difficulties. And I think many of these difficulties are going to be resolved when we realize that creation is continuous, that matter is continuously being created, and because the universe is learning about itself, and that's why when we look at the universe, it's not slowing down, it's actually accelerating.
Of everything that you've studied, you've learned, what just thrills you the most about the universe, Nassim? What's out there that just not necessarily baffles you, but basically blows your mind away?
I would say that, like, the immensity and the beauty, you know, just blows my mind. The harmony, and the connectivity of all things, this beautiful, you know, interdependence of everything. Like, everything is dependent on everything else. You know, we tend to forget that in our world. You know, yeah. We get busy with our life and we feel individual and all this. We don't realize how interdependent we are on, like, making, you know, the fact that the sun comes up, that the moon comes up, that, you know, that there's air to breathe, that, you know, that the atmosphere didn't get wiped out by a solar flare last night, that a comet didn't slam into our planet. I mean, like, the amount of things that have to happen, even in just one human body, it's incredible. Like, there's, like, billions of chemical change occurring every minute. I mean, it's just, it's incredible, the harmony and the talking, the beauty of the whole system is remarkable. And I think when I feel closest to what I could call the experience of God is when I sense that interrelationship of all things.
And for me, the exciting part is that the laws of physics seem to hold up throughout the entire universe. Everything's the same.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. This is a remarkable thing, too. It seems that there is fundamental rules, there's fundamental dynamics that you can find everywhere. And for me, that was really crucial early on. It's like, it can't be two different theories. It's got to be one specific way that the universe does things, and it's got to be consistent across all scales. And, you know, because it's so obvious when you see it in nature, and it's so well organized. So for me, you know, the idea that it's all random just didn't make sense. Even at the biological level, which is still the prevalent theory at the biological level, that all this chemistry and all this amazing organization is done in a random way, it just doesn't add up.
Do you subscribe to the possibilities that there is life after death? Because to me, it's all tied together.
Yes, I do. I think that no energy is gained, no energy is lost, that, like, all information is still present, and that, like, it's in constant state of flux. And, you know, that when you see energy gain in one place, it's because there was energy lost at another place, and that it's a constant state of dynamic flux. And so I see no reason why, you know, the awareness of a being, the consciousness of a being, the information that makes up a being would disappear. I think it just reorganizes. It changes scale. It changes relationship to the rest of the universe. And then it might reorganize in another time with other particles. And look a little different and so on. Mm-hmm. But I see no reason why not. Like, we see cycles everywhere we look in nature. So why would that not apply to the consciousness of a being? I think that's very plausible. And In some ways, you know, it's not well documented, but in some ways, there's a lot of evidence for that. Like, you know, people that remember past lives and then that, you know, go and research it and find who they were, and, you know, and all this stuff. I mean, it's, you know, it's not well documented, it's not very scientific and so on. But I believe it makes sense. It makes sense in the terms of the theories that I've been bringing forth and in what I observe in nature, and I see no reason why not. And I think it gives people a really larger view of who they are and what they're doing, and, you know, a sense of purpose, of that they're not just, you know, like the result of some
quirk.
Yeah, exactly. Some fluke, or, you know, some microbe. There's actually a purpose. There's actually a reason. There's a reason that they're conscious. You know, that they have questions about the universe and about how they got here and what it all means and all this. And those are valid questions. And that it's good to explore those questions and think about it and come up with ideas and come out, and everything is okay. You know that it's okay that, like, it might be, you know, and it might be not so clear at first, and it, you know, but it's worth the exploration. And at the end of the day, you might find something very valuable.
The fact that, you know, people believe in an afterlife, believe in a higher power, what does that tell you, Nassim?
I think that people have a natural sense that there is something more than, you know, you're born, you do this thing we call life, you know, and you work, and then you retire, and then you die. You know, I think people have a sense that there's more to it, that it's like some kind of memory that they're trying to get back to, that there's a larger purpose, that, you know, that it's not just random craziness, and that there's more to life than what appears to be. And when you look at the amazing riches of the knowledge of one human being, like all their thoughts throughout their life, all the things they observe, all the things they think of, even if they're like mopping the floor, you know, they might be mopping the floor and thinking about the universe and how it works and the molecules, or they might be thinking about their girlfriend and whatever and having emotions about it. All this is so incredible. It's so valid. I just can't believe in this amazing organization I see everywhere that this is all for nothing, that it means nothing. And I think naturally, instinctively, people know that. And the ones that have the courage spend their life looking for that answer.
All right. Well, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment with you, Nassim. We're going to take phone calls now. Lots to talk with you about. Nassim's website, of course, theresonanceproject.org. It's linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back in a moment. Don't touch your dial. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM.